I'm Matt Knotts.
And I'm Chris Lindstrom. And we are the co-founders of the Lunchador Podcast Network, your home for amazing and wide-ranging podcasts in Rochester.
With shows like Anomaly Presents, Behind the Glass, the Level Up Coffee Podcast, Punches and Popcorn, Just Can't Not, and of course, Food About Town, we celebrate the people, places, and things that make Rochester a fantastic place to live.
We have more shows joining the network soon and offer remote and in-person recordings and video too. We're excited to bring distinct and diverse voices together on one network.
Follow Lunchador on social media to catch new episodes as soon as they release and stay tuned for exciting news about new shows and how to support them. Lunchador, celebrating Rochester's creativity through the magic of podcasting.
Good morning, and thank you for listening to the podcast today. I appreciate you very much. Thank you for being here. Do a little monologue episode today. And I'll tell you the truth, it's only a monologue today because I need to sort of get this straight. I am about to confuse you, and I'm sorry. This should be frictionless, right? I'm all about frictionless in any interaction that we have in life, business or personal. It should always be frictionless. And I'm about to cause some friction by confusing you. But let me explain. The reason I'm doing this monologue today is because today, this episode is actually the 199th episode of this podcast. Now, if I were you and I followed this podcast, I would be going, what is he talking about? He just did his 100th episode 2 weeks ago with Brother Weeze. What the hell? Let me explain. For some ungodly reason that I cannot explain, early on in this podcast's life, I decided that the episodes in which I had interviews were real episodes, and those would be numbered. 1, 2, 3, 4, so on and so forth. The episodes in which I monologued would be considered mini episodes or just kind of fillers or things that go in between the interviews, and so I never counted them. And so what happened was the interviews I had a number on, and the actual just straight up episodes, how many total podcasts have I put out, interview or not, I didn't really have a number on. Well, I went back and looked at the number, and I had no idea what I was going to see when I did the Brother Weeze interview. It could have been any random number, and I saw that Brother Weeze interview was number 197. And I went, well, shit. You know, this is going to be way too confusing if I start to promote, like, oh, the 200th episode. So I just said, okay, I'm not even going to promote it. I'll put it in the podcast, but I'm not going to put it, like, on social media, like, you know, click on the 200th episode. It'll cause too much confusion. I've already spent too much time on this. I'm sorry. But the next week's episode is another special episode, and I have decided to once again have a broadcast legend be my guest. Next week, my guest on this podcast for the 200th overall episode will be Don Alhart. And full disclosure, because I like to show you how the sausage is made, that interview has already happened, and it's fantastic. And it's not just, you know, I do ask some pretty stereotypical questions, but we talk a lot about the business and kind of, you know, I mean, he gets into some things about contract negotiation, which I think are just so fascinating. And what I wanted to know was, you know, a few things. I wanted to know, Don, when, you know, we know you got on the air 58 years ago, but when did you know you had made it? When did things change? And it wasn't just, you know, you were the kid who was on the air, but now you are a part of Rochester's overall just makeup. Like, when did that happen? So we talked about that. We talked about the other thing I think is interesting. I don't want to blow the whole interview. Is we talked about retiring and deciding to retire, and when did he actually make this decision? Because he just announced it a few weeks ago. But when did he actually decide this would be it? June 6th of 2024, which is his retirement date. When, how long, like, is that a 10-year plan, a 5-year plan, a 1-year plan? Like, what's the answer to that? So again, you'll get to hear that next week. A lot of other separate cool, really, really, really cool anecdotes. And yeah, just a huge honor having Don on the air. That being said, we have an episode to do today, episode number 199. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you. I had a lot of stuff that I wanted to talk to you about. First of all, this was actually last week, but our groundbreaking has gone fine so far, except that between the eclipse and the rain this past week, the construction is already behind schedule, which I could have told you was going to happen because everybody told me it was going to happen. Everybody who's ever been a part of any construction at all told me, Paulie, this will not be on time or on budget. Brace yourself. So we, you know, the on budget part you can do some planning for. We worked in a, they call it a contingency, a 5% contingency to the final agreed upon price. But the timing you really can't do anything about. They're about a full week behind already on this construction. But nonetheless, it's happening. Things are happening. You can start to see the outline of the new building. You know, the they've dug out the where the truck dock is going to go in. I can see the new parking lot. And the masons are supposed to be here tomorrow, Monday. And we'll actually start getting some brick laid and start to see some structure actually happen, which is just, you know, the whole thing's just been this just complete dream come true. It's just so pinch myself, you know, that this is even happening. There was a lot of PR around that, and that's because I happen to have the world's best publicist, Ryan Guglielmo, and she really did do the PR for this groundbreaking, and we were covered all over the state. We got, you know, we had a whole press conference, cameras from every news station were there. This was really just, again, speaking of dreams come true. I couldn't believe we got the coverage we did. And so then I was nervous when what happened this week happened, because this week I had to make a couple of waves and do something somewhat publicly that was going to be a little bit polarizing. And that is this. So a month or two ago, the Democrat and Chronicle reached out to me and a handful of other people and said, would you like to be a part of a storytellers event that we do? Democrat and Chronicle does these events where they do, they have people come in and tell 7 to 9 minute stories. It's kind of a random time frame, but okay. 7 to 9 minute stories about a certain topic. And the topic was going to be food. And they came to me and they said, we think you're a good storyteller. You know, we think that you probably have a lot to say about food. We want to be clear, this is not a 7 to 9 minute commercial for your sauce. In fact, preferably the sauce doesn't even come up. I said, yep, totally agree. Yeah, sounds great. And we proceeded to sign up to be a storyteller. And the event was supposed to happen this coming Wednesday night, the 17th, right, at Comedy at the Carlson. Well, that event has been canceled due to the writer's strike. The journalists are striking at the DNC, and that's not my story to tell. I'm sure that you are well aware of that at this point or have followed that to a certain extent. What I didn't know, though, to take a little sidebar here, was I didn't know, and did you know this? The CEO of Gannett lives in Rochester. He lives in Victor. I never knew that. I had no clue. Gannett is a big company. The man, Mike Reed is his name, he lives in Victor. Who knew? My goodness, a local guy. So this strike, you know, is so important because the journalists are fighting hard to be heard and be paid and be paid, you know, their fair share and get a contract that's fair to them. But it sets it's a real opportunity for journalists around the entire country to make a stand, because this is the one that the CEO of Gannett is most likely to be affected by because it's happening in his backyard. Anyway, I say that because when you sign up to be a storyteller at one of these events, they assign you a coach, and my coach was Tracy Schumacher. And Tracy, of course, is somebody I've known a very long time. She's covered us, the business multiple times. She just covered the groundbreaking last week. I mean, Tracy's been a friend. We're also friends with Gary Craig. We see him all the time. My wife, I think, is better friends with Gary than I am. But, you know, we see him at Starbucks and 12 Corners. He's always in there working on his stories. And we love Gary. We love Tracy. And I feel an allegiance. On top of that, my aunt has just retired from Gannett. Now, she didn't work in Rochester. She worked in Pennsylvania for a long time in Harrisburg and then more recently in Pittsburgh. But anyway, so I have many connections. My heart, pieces of my heart are with Gannett. And when this happened, that the journalists went on strike and it wasn't immediately resolved, there was a decision to be made. And Leah Stacey, the editor of City Magazine, who I'm also proud to say has been a friend for a very long time. I mean, Leah's somebody that I've just thought the world of for a very long time. I think Leah could change the world if she wanted to. I mean, it's one of those things where I think, you know, sometimes I tell her what a big fan I am of hers, and she looks at me like I'm an alien. She's like, why? You know, not that I don't know what she's thinking, but she kind of looks at me like, are you serious? That's because I know her better than she knows me, because I read her stuff, right? So, like, that's why I feel like I know her. Meanwhile, she's going, we're not even friends, dude. No, I think we probably are. But anyway, she called me. And she said, Paulie, I don't think we should do the storytellers. Let's bail on storytellers. And not only that, let's make a little bit of a scene out of it. You know, she's going, I'm the editor of City, right? Like, you're Paulie. Like, the two of us plus the other people, everyone's kind of in the storytellers, you know, arguably maybe has some influence. Let's put all of our influence together here and kind of make a stand and say we stand with the journalists. And I said, abso-freaking-lutely. Absolutely. Because to me, frankly, working hard and being undervalued by a major media conglomerate hits kind of close to home, if you know what I'm saying. If you smell what the Rock is cooking. So I said, absolutely. So we went and got the rest of the storytellers on board, and we sent a message to Michael Killian, the editor, the boss at the Democrat and Chronicle. And you know, with respect to Michael, his response to us was very respectful. He said, thanks for letting us know. Event is canceled. And so it is canceled. It is not happening. My story, which I don't know what's going to happen with the journalist strike. I was talking to my aunt. She said, look, sometimes these things last a day. Obviously, this one's going to last longer than a day. Sometimes these things last... she told me there was one that went a year and a half at one point, or maybe even is still going on. These things they're unpredictable. How long will a strike last? Oh, sorry, my phone is ringing. Okay, sorry, I had to end. I've got my podcast set up in my car that allows me to sort of record a podcast hands free, but I don't have. Okay, all right, we're good. Anyway, so where was I? Yes, storytellers. So we decide we're not going to do this event. It hits close to home for me, obviously, for a major media conglomerate to not pay up, if you will. And we decide we're going to make this statement. Now, my story, because remember, it wasn't allowed to be about Sauce. They had worked with me. We did three coaching sessions, which is good because I don't have any issues with public speaking. I'm not going to get nervous. Frankly, if anything, I need to be structured because I will stand up there in for a 7 to 9 minute speech, I'll go 15 minutes and it'll be all over the place and it'll suck. So I was very happy to get coached, and Michael Killian and Tracy both coached me. And the story was going to be about my spending time in Italy as an exchange student, a Rotary exchange student when I was a teenager. And the story went a little something like this. Let me see if I can do at least some of it here for you. So I'm 15 years old. I live in the northeast corner of Ohio, small town called Conneaut, Ohio. I am not particularly special for any reason. I'm not really any different. I kind of want to be different. You know, I think about it a lot. What makes me different? I wish there was a really good answer to that, but there's nothing about me truly that is different or unique or anything like that. I have relatively low self-confidence, low self-esteem. But, you know, I'm trudging through life. Life's okay. I have this one kind of unique thing about me, and that is that a lot of times people will walk up to me and ask me about my grandfather, Grandpa Pete, Sauce Man. He was known as the Sauce Man in Conneaut because his mother was the Sauce Lady, because during the Great Depression, she made bottled tomatoes and then traded it with her neighbors for other things. And that was how they made ends meet, was she grew what she could, she bottled it all, and then she sold it or traded it for other foods. That's how she put food on the table. And my grandfather, being the youngest of, I think it was 8, maybe 9 kids, really ended up doing a lot of that work with her and being the one to kind of pass the torch or carry on the sauce thing. And, of course, the Depression ended and you know, she passed, and I never did get to meet her, but obviously knew my grandfather very well, and I got to spend these Sundays at my grandpa's house. And his mother had come from Italy, and so I grew up with this just absolute enamoration for sauce and Italy and everything that had to do with being Italian. If there was anything that made me different, it was the fact that I was Italian. And not that that's that different of a thing, there's plenty of Italians, but it was my thing. So I clung to it. And so when the opportunity arose in my 10th grade year, a Rotarian came to school and gave a talk about how you could become a Rotary exchange student. And everyone in school went to this assembly because it meant you got out of 7th period. But I went because I wanted to be an exchange student. So I really signed up. And we went through orientations and lectures and paperwork and more paperwork and more paperwork. And I convinced my parents a dozen times that I was serious. And sure enough, I was on the road to what 18 months later would be studying abroad in Italy for one full year. Now, anyone who studies abroad, I have a tremendous amount of respect for. But I would like to say that being an exchange student and being a study abroad are two very different things. Study abroad typically is college, one semester. You go with a bunch of American students. There's usually a bunch of you, right? And you usually stay with other Americans or the other study abroad kids. Plenty of English is spoken. When you're an exchange student, you go alone and you stay with a host family. Rotarians, good people, vetted people, but still you go alone. So, very different experience. 18 months goes by very slowly. I was so looking forward to this. I could not wait. I was on cloud nine the whole time that I was about to go to Italy for my exchange student year. Finally, after a long wait, 18 months comes and goes. It's time to go. I fly from Cleveland to Washington, D.C., from D.C. to Rome, from Rome to Cagliari, on the island of Sardinia, where I am picked up by my host father and his son, Federico, and they drive me 4 hours up through the twists and turns of mountainous Sardinia. I am so excited. I am finally in Italy. The food that I am going to, the women too. I was excited for the women, but this is not that kind of speech. But the food that I was going to experience, I have been salivating over for a year and a half. I have been now traveling for about 24 hours by the time I finally step foot in Italy in my step-parents' house. And there is my stepmother who has prepared dinner. And what has she prepared? Steak and a baked potato. Now, there's nothing wrong with steak and a baked potato, but it isn't exactly what I was picturing as Italian food. So I said, this is great. They said, by the way, they said they wanted me to feel at home. By the way, all translation is done through a small pocket dictionary. I did not speak Italian. They spoke very limited English, and there was no cell phone yet, no smartphone that was going to instantly translate anything. So all of this was done through a small pocket dictionary and nonverbal communication. But they wanted me to feel right at home, and right at home I felt, with the exact same meal my mom had made 2 days before at my going away party. So I started to tell them, look, I want to experience Italian food. I want Italian food. I want pizza. I want pasta. I want spaghetti and meatballs. And of course, they're looking at me going, meatballs? What, you want us to roll meat into a ball? Right? Not really a thing there. Now, it kind of is. I mean, if you've been to Rome, you're going, what is he talking about? I've had meatballs. It's more of a tourist thing. You go to Rome or Venice, there's plenty of stereotypical Italian restaurants that will give you spaghetti and meatballs. But this is small town Italy. This is real Italy. So meatballs to them sounds like a ball of meat. They don't really know what I'm talking about. Sure, they've got pasta, they've got pizza, but again, the pizza's different. I mean, I grew up eating Domino's. This is thin crust pizza. You can't order pepperoni pizza. Well, you can, but you won't get pepperoni. You'll get little peppers. That's what pepperoni pizza is. When I say I want Italian food, they say, what do you mean? Everything that you eat here is Italian because we're in Italy. I said, I know. I want stereotypical Italian food. They go, got it. Fish. I go, huh? Fish? Yes. Fish is stereotypical Italian food. Think about it. It's a peninsula. And me, I was on an island in Sardinia. So it was stereotypical Italian food to eat fish and olives and grape leaves. And ladies and gentlemen, it was Mediterranean food because we were in the middle of the Mediterranean. So your traditional Italian food, yes, it exists. But pasta with red sauce, that was once in a while. Pasta was usually mixed in with last night's leftovers, maybe some oil, butter, cheese, stuff like that, just whatever they could do to get food on the table. Because what my big lesson on the year was that these are just regular people. This was the single greatest cultural learning experience in my life because I was around regular people. And I realized it after I was done being a tourist. For 2-3 weeks, you're just a tourist. Then you actually live there and you see that people are just going to work, trying to pay their bills, trying to feed their families. They're just like us. The same way that I suspect most people in most countries are around the entire world, they are just like us. So why do we treat them differently? I don't understand. Do have one funny story, though. I wanted to bring Italy home with me. So I did two things on my last day in Italy. I went and got a tan because, again, girls. And I was about to come back from Italy, and I wanted to be a hot commodity in my hometown when I got home to Conneaut, Ohio. So, right, needed to get that confidence somewhere. And then secondly, I went and bought a bottle of wine, 1999, I remember. I bought this bottle, it said 1999 right on it. And I knew nothing about wine other than you can age wine, and as you age wine, it becomes better and better. Well, it turns out you can't just age any old wine. So you can't just say, I'll buy this $12 bottle of wine and stick it in the back of a closet. So that bottle of wine traveled with me from Ohio to Rochester, first apartment, second apartment, father-in-law's basement where me and my wife moved in to save up money to buy a house at one point. That bottle of wine traveled with me everywhere until finally the occasion came to where I decided it was time to open the bottle of wine. It was in July of 2015, and it was the night I proposed to my wife, and she said yes. Went home and said, this is the night we open the bottle of wine that has been with me for the last 16 years. We cork it. We open it. I smell it. It doesn't smell that good. So I take a little sip, and it is basically vinegar. Because as I said, you cannot just pick any old cheap bottle of wine, do a terrible job of storing it for 16 years and expect it to age like a fine wine. It wasn't a fine wine to begin with. It was grape juice, and now it tastes like vinegar. So people ask me all the time, what's your favorite Italian restaurant in Rochester, Pauly? What do you recommend? And I say the same thing. I answer a question with a question. American Italian or Italian Italian? And the truth is, I just prefer jarred sauce, you know? Anyway, that was it. What do you think? Was that okay? I don't know. Would that have been okay? Maybe it would have been okay. Oh, what else? What else did I want to talk? I appreciate you so much listening to the podcast. Really, next week will be better, I promise. Don Alhart. I mean, right? Right. So we'll call this a mini episode. I'm going to call it off right here, right now. A lot of stuff going on this week, by the way. This weekend, if you get the chance, if you want a really fun night, Friday night is Holy Childhood's Wine at Center Ice at the Tim Hortons Iceplex. This is that one at MCC. It used to be Bill Gray's Iceplex for a long time. This is the Tim Horton Iceplex. It's Friday night, and it's through the Holy Childhood. So if you go to their website, I will be personally working my own booth, dealing Zweigel's meatballs, A lot of people don't realize Zweigels does do meatballs, but they put them out under the brand Mama Camardo's, which is CEO of Zweigel, Julie Camardo's recipe, her mom's recipe for meatballs. So Mama Camardo's meatballs and Guglielmo sauce this Friday night. But if you don't know about the event, of course, proceeds benefit Holy Childhood, which is Special Touch Bakery, which is just a beautiful thing. And again, Google that if you don't know enough about it. But at the end of the day, you get to pay a little bit of money to walk in and eat and drink all night long. It's one of those, and I'm a sucker for those kind of events. So if you get the chance, come on out. We'd love to have you on Friday night at the Holy Childhood's Wine at Center Ice. In the meantime, we'll call this one a little bit short. I appreciate you listening, and next week, oh, I hope you are ready. Make sure next week you brew yourself a warm, fresh cup of coffee and sit down on Sunday morning for a fabulous conversation with Don Alhart. In the meantime, have a great week, and thank you for listening to the podcast.
Hey there, coffee lovers. Do you want to make your morning cup of Joe something special? Let's talk about Joe Bean Coffee, a gem right here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador. I've been a longtime fan of Joe Bean. Kathy, Dina, and the whole team are passionate about their coffee and this city, and it comes through in every cup of Joe Bean coffee that I brew at home. Joe Bean has been a part of Rochester for years, over a decade, building lasting community and a sense of belonging for everyone who loves coffee. Next time you need beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. Even better, subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy and you'll receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule and never be without your favorite coffee. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.